Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for July 27th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me in sweltering Tokyo is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? Staying cool?
Yeah, well, I got the coolerator on. Actually, that's a misnomer. It's air conditioner.
Wrong answer. Tell me about these machines. The answer is, dude, I'm always cool. Ready? Repeat.
Dude, I'm always cool.
You're lost.
I have an answer for that one, but it wouldn't be deleted from the edit.
Are you saying
censorship?
Are you saying I censor you? Never, no. Never.
Sensitive.
Sensitive. All right. Well, we're not that sensitive on this week's show. We've got an interview with Logan Undersick of the Swallows, and we're going to talk about the Swallows, the Bay Stars, and answer a great listener question. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Wednesday, I got to talk to Logan Undersick of the Swallows. He's a big dude, man. 6'8". I think he's listed about 250, but I mean, man, you're standing next to him and he just seems larger than 6'8 to me. And you're 6'3 and a half, you said?
No, I'm about 6'2 and dust.
You're shrinking.
I am. Well, I've stopped shrinking more or less. I haven't shrunk in a year or so, but
all right. Well,
I'm kind of Darvish sized.
Darvish size. All right. Well, this is a big dude, man. He's his first year in Japan.
I had talked to Loke Van Mill in March, so I'm used to big.
I didn't get to talk to him. He was 7'1", was he?
At least about,
7 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know he was at least 7 feet.
I wonder whoever thought he'd be a catcher.
Someone who saw him when he was 2.
Well, they probably figured that his release would be near the mound.
But anyway, Logan is having a good first year. He's a guy, I guess he didn't strike out a guy per inning back home when he pitched mostly in the minors. And he's around that area right now. His whip is about 1.1 here in Japan. He's got 19 holds. And he and Tony Barnett are shutting down games for the Swallows. And that's one reason Yakult has found itself on track recently, especially in the CL race. And he's from a hot weather state. He's a hot weather guy. And when I was sitting down to talk to him, it was about 30 degrees on Wednesday at Yokohama Stadium. And he calls it spring weather. You'll hear that in the interview. And he and the Swallows are hot again. So let's hear what he had to say.
All right, we are joined this week by Logan Undersick. Did I get it right?
You got it right.
I got it close. All right, thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
No problem. Good to be here.
All right, so it's your first year in Japan. How does it compare so far to what you expected before you came here?
Everybody told me to watch Mr. Baseball when I first came over here to kind of get an idea of what the league was like and kind of how things were run. And so I did that. And then, obviously, I talked to Tony before I got out here and a couple of guys I knew that played over here. And they said, you know, it's different than the States because in the States it's more of a on your own type of deal to get ready for games, get ready for stuff like that. And there's a lot more stretching, a lot more team stuff involved. And, it is an adjustment, but nothing too big that I haven't seen so far.
It still is kind of like baseball.
Yeah, it's still baseball. I mean, once the game starts, it's still, 90 feet, 60 feet, 6 inches, and don't let the guy hit the ball over the fence. So, other than that, it's the same game I've been playing all my life.
Okay. Now, you're from Texas, and it's your first season in Japan, and it's getting hot and nasty now around the country. So, how do you get through this period?
Where I grew up in Texas, this is about spring weather for us. So,
You hear that, Tokyo people? It's not hot.
Right now it's been, it's a little humid, and if you're walking around in the city, it's a little warm, but on the baseball field, this is what I played in all my life, so I'm used to this. And, Cincinnati the past 5 years before this, it was the same way, except for being 90 degrees, feeling like 100. It was 95 to 100, feels like 105 with 100% humidity. So, I'm used to this weather, and, you know, right now there's fans and everything going on all around, so it's easy to stay cool.
Toughen up, Tokyo. That's what I hear. All right. We ask the hitters all the time, but a listener wanted to get some specifics as much as you can. But how does your approach change when you come to Japan to face Japanese hitters?
Well, spring training was a lot different because there's no really way to set up a hitter here because they swing at a lot of stuff and they foul everything off no matter where you throw it. So basically it was just turned into attacking. Just be aggressive and go right after them and make them hit my pitch and not let them, you know, fall behind the count where I got to throw something where they can crush it. And fortunately, for the most part, it's worked. There's been a couple instances where it hasn't, but yeah, that's baseball though. So I just stay aggressive and go after guys.
Now, what's your approach with throwing off-speed pitches? Have you added more or taken away more? Or what do you do with those?
No, I've kept my same pitches. It's been probably a little less breaking balls here just because I've had the baseball's different, so to get the same feel and the same movement has been a little tough, but you know, it's just a matter of keep throwing it when I warm up, and as the season's gone on, my curveball's come and gone. Some games it's really good, some games, you know, I can't throw it anywhere over the plate, and then my split's finally starting to come around where it used to be, and that's been one of the big adjustments, is just trying to figure out where to grip it on the baseball because of the difference in the leather and the stickiness.
Mm-hmm. Which is something we hear a lot. All right, and so coaches don't come to you and say, hey, let's go with the more breaking pitches this time out, or depends on the matchups?
No, they know how I am. From just hearing how I've thrown in the States and seeing how I was in spring training and, you know, the first part of the season, they understand what my best pitches are and what I do to succeed. And, you know, there's times where they'll suggest certain things or, you know, hey, you're doing too much of this or not enough of this. How about you try to mix it in here and there? And, you know, for the most part, it's worked. But when push comes to shove, I'm going to go with my best stuff and not give in.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Now, you had a shouting match. Now, just before we started recording, you told me that you had another shouting match that I missed. But you had a shouting match back in April with an umpire. And I'm just wondering, why did it escalate to that point?
Well, being a foreign guy and not speaking the language, me and the catcher got into a little bit of a mix-up on our signals with a guy on second base, and it was a pretty crucial part in the game.
I was watching.
And, you know, you don't want to cross him up and him miss a ball, run score that way, or, you know, hurt him somehow, because I throw over 90, and if he's expecting a breaking ball and I throw a fastball and hit him and hurt him, then, you know, it looks bad on both of us, and plus the umpire, if he gets hit, he'll be a little upset. So I tried to call him out to make sure we had everything straight, and for some reason there's a rule this year that nobody ever told me about, or I've never heard of in all my years of playing baseball, but there's only three instances in the game where the catcher can come out and talk to the pitcher no matter what. So if your starter uses up all three in his first six innings, the bullpen's kind of in trouble. And I didn't know that, and I tried to talk to the catcher to get our stuff straight, and the umpire told me I couldn't do that. And, you know, sometimes I have a little short fuse, especially when it's real competitive, and I'd already given up a couple of my other teammates' runs, so my anger was high, and it just turned and escalated pretty quickly. And, you know, I got out what I needed to say, whether he understood me or not, which more likely he didn't. But, afterwards, we kind of got the rule figured out some, but I still believe it's one of the dumbest rules in baseball.
I'm with you there. Now, how do you keep your composure in a situation like that? Because you have to refocus and get back on the mound and pitch.
I didn't that game because I ended up serving up a three-run homer because I was so frustrated and so upset that I just I lost track of what I wanted to do, and catcher put down the sign, and I just went with it and threw it, and right when I started lifting my leg, I realized it wasn't the pitch I wanted, but it was already too late, and I hung a cutter, and Tutsugo hit one about 450 feet into the stand, so I didn't keep my cool there, and that cost me. So, but it's sometimes it's not easy, but you gotta, you know, kind of block out the bad and just focus on what the job is and do it.
Now, you're learning the umpire's tendencies on their calls and everything, and I'm sure you remember the umpire from that night.
The tendencies, they change game to game and pitcher to pitcher. I mean, you know, we watch the games on TV, and most of the bullpens, because they're underneath or, you know, before the game, inside, before I go out to the bullpen, and, you know, the knees sometimes get called a strike, sometimes don't. They say, oh, you get a higher strike, but then you throw a ball at the belt, and it's a ball, and then the guy will throw the ball at the belt the next time the guy hits it 450 feet. It's like, that's where he's looking for. That's in the zone. So it's one of those things where you just kind of throw it over the plate and hope to God that day they're feeling good and they're going to give you that pitch, because you'll see sometimes guys get a ball 4 inches off the plate, and the next time, you know, it's 2 inches off the plate and it's a ball. So it can be frustrating, but it's just one of the things you got to deal with.
You are trying to learn the umpires though, and who they are and their numbers and everything.
I try to, but most of the time when I get up there, I just see the catcher.
Okay. All right. Now, how's having Tony Barnett here on the team with you to guide you through this first year?
It's been good, especially early on, just with all the differences from the preparation of things and the meetings and just the longness of the practices and the stretch and all that stuff, just kind of giving me some advice on certain things to do in there, and then things away from the field and stuff. And I mean, once the game started, though, he's just like, you know, you do what you need to do, do what you do. And, you know, he's been here, this is his sixth year here now, so he's been a real big help. And, you know, I can't thank him enough for the stuff that he's, you know, kind of showed me and told me about things. But at the same point, I still get frustrated at things, and he just tells me, it's Japan, so it's never going to change.
Even when you're not playing baseball, you got to say it's just Japan. All right, so what's your take on the league? It's very competitive. All the teams are all bunched up. No team really has shown any superiority over any of the others. How do you guys go forward, and what is your thought process?
You know, we just got to battle. That's been the main thing. Early on in the season, it was kind of, you know, our pitching was great. Our offense was a little shaky, scoring some runs. I mean, we get some hits, but seemed to only push one or two across, but we were throwing so well, we were winning a bunch of games. And then we hit a long funk where we lost 9 in a row, and that was miserable for everybody. But, you know, since then, we've played some pretty good ball. We've blown a couple games, myself included, which have hurt us. But more than that, the teams are all, in this league, are all evenly matched pretty much. You know, some teams like the Giants have really good pitching so far, but they're not hitting very well. Other teams, you know, Hiroshima early on in the year, they weren't hitting very well. They were pitching pretty good. And now all of a sudden they're figuring out they're hitting, and they're still pitching pretty decent. Shinichi's kind of one of those teams where just when you think you got them figured out, next thing you know, they put up 10 runs. So everybody, I mean, the Tigers are the Tigers. They got a couple of real good arms and a couple guys in the middle of the lineup there that can really hurt you. So, I mean, everybody's evenly matched, but I think somebody's going to get hot here soon and, you know, maybe put a little distance between them. Hopefully that's us, and I think we got, right now, what we're showing since we come out of the break, if we can keep putting up, you know, 5-6 runs a game or with our starting pitching in our bullpen, we can shut it down.
Or 17, you know, that'll do.
Yeah, we need to save some of those for
save
the next
your 11
game.
Spots, yeah. All right, last question. You're so tall. What kind of incidents do you bump into, so to speak?
Well, we went to, last time we were in Nagoya, or the time before last time we were in Nagoya, we were going to eat, and going in the restaurant, they have a short door. It probably hits me about the middle of the face, and I thought I ducked far enough, and I ended up crushing my head. That's pretty common here. And other things, just, you know, having problems. Like, I go to a store to try to find a shirt or something like that I like. And
I'm laughing because I have long arms, and I'm not nearly as tall as you.
If I put a short sleeve shirt on, it's usually okay. But the other day, me and my wife on the All-Star break went down to Otabai Hoken or whatever it is, some little island out where it's called like American Town or something like that.
Okinawa?
No. It's no, it's southeast of Tokyo. It's some little island you take.
Odaiba, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, Odaiba.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Right.
But
yeah.
Either way, we saw. I heard about it, and you know, they were saying there were some malls and stuff there, so we were just kind of walking around wasting some time, and went to a store and tried on an Under Armour jacket, because I was like, oh, this looks pretty nice, and put it on. It was a little short in the sleeves, and the guy said they had a double X. I was like, all right, that should work. Put it on. It was maybe a quarter of an inch longer. I'm like, yeah, it's not going to work. So it's kind of disappointing when you see something that you like, and you just pray when you put it on it fits. So pants are the same way. Down in spring training, got some Nike stuff, and I put on a couple of the jackets they gave me, and one fit. The other ones were a little short in the sleeves, and then I saw some pants in there, and I put the pants on, and yeah, there was no chance. So I ended up just giving those away to Mitch Denning. So yeah, they'll fit him, so somebody's getting use out of them.
All right, well, we hope you have better luck shopping for wins.
Yeah, that's the main thing right now. I don't care if the clothes don't fit, as long as we win ball games.
All right, thanks a lot for your time today.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks again, Logan. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for your time.
I've seen Logan. I haven't I don't even know if I've. I always have to be careful. When I go to the park, we have a list of players we want to talk to, and both foreign and Japanese, and sometimes the conversations happen, and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably said hi, but I don't recall. And I had this very uncomfortable meeting with Barrios
Edison.
So I'd wanted to talk to him for quite a long time, and he, he had the disagreeable habit of disappearing to the farm team every time the Hawks came up here last year. So anyway, I saw him this year, and I said, "Oh, I want to talk." And then what happened was he said, "I want to just introduce myself and say hi." He says, "Oh, you did that the last time I was in Chiba."
Oh no.
Oh no. Oh, it must have been memorable.
Oh no.
But it was like he only had a minute and he was busy signing people, signing things, and we didn't have much to say, and so that's what I remember is not much.
Not much. All right. Well, as someone who doesn't shy away from the heat, I love what Logan said about the summer and the temperature and stuff, but what stuck in your head?
Well, it might be time for me to go back and see what did I miss in Mr. Baseball after this is the second person in 2 weeks who's talked about what they knew about Mr. Baseball.
Yeah.
And I've heard it a half dozen times this year. Anyway, the interesting thing to me was a couple of things. One is that it's very hard to describe things you're not familiar with.
Mm.
And he's coming to this situation, he says it's still baseball and it's 90 feet between bases and 60 feet 6 inches and okay. But I got the impression, when he said this expression, there's no way to set up a hitter.
Yeah, that stuck with me a little bit, and I probably should have asked him, what do you mean? But again, I don't like to get into too many of the details about what they're doing because I don't think they're going to tell us about it anyway. And they're going to talk around it because, they're giving away company secrets here. So, but yeah, I thought, well.
So y'all should be in jail. I'm joking. Well, what I meant was about it was not that. Because obviously it's not, I don't think that's exactly what he meant. But I think what he meant was I brought my setting up hitters apparatus and delivery system and, my practices here. They didn't work.
Setup 2.0, yeah.
Exactly. And I installed it and it didn't work.
Right.
So you can't do it. But I completely understand what he's going through. And in fact, I found the whole discussion about dealing with Japanese baseball. I had this image while he was talking of somebody sitting down at a large jigsaw puzzle without knowing what the image is, but knowing how you do jigsaw puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can do this, and I'm good at this, and I can do this, and wait, that doesn't work. So that was the image I got. And so he's trying to describe how something should work but doesn't, and then what he's doing in response to that. And the curveball that didn't work, and it's still kind of a work in progress. And it was all really quite interesting because the language that we come with so much limits the ability to discuss it and think about the process.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, some of these guys are so good at it. They're so good at breaking these things down. And I think, I expect that probably by the end of the season or perhaps next year, when the Swallows turn around and say, "Hey, we'd like you to pitch here for 3 more years, and give them a good contract, I hope,"
mm-hmm.
That he'll have the internal vocabulary to describe and to explain, the processes that he goes through. It was really fascinating to listen to his struggles or his experiments with Japan.
Right. And, what stuck out for me was, and of course, that was a big talking point on Twitter, especially when it happened back in April, was when he had that little blow up with the umpire in a game at Jingu. And he said it was a rule change, but as far as I know, that it was three trips to the mound for the game, plus you get one in extra innings. As far as I know, I don't know anything else. I know they try to cut down on it. And I talked to Tony Barnett earlier in the season before we did the interview, and he said exactly what Logan said, which was that, look, this is a safety issue. It's a safety issue for the catcher and for the umpire himself, because if those two guys get crossed up and a ball comes flying in at his head, it's a concussion for him as well. So
yes, we should be concerned about the umpires. I mean, we should, because they're human beings, and I don't mean to be snide. I mean, I don't mean to be any snider than I come off as being.
I was going to say, yeah, you hit a little bit of the snide juice on that one. There was no doubt about it. You hit that button.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay. Anyway, no, but I understand that. I mean, and all fair. Yeah, you don't want anybody to get hurt. You know, there needs to be understanding of that from the team's side. Obviously, if this is something that affects the team, this is something that they have to look at. Like, the starter can't go, well, I ain't going to worry about the relievers. They don't need it as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be out here six innings, guys. So, you know, there could be that. But I think the interesting part of that was they didn't tell us. How often have I heard this? Like Jose Fernandez, you know, playing the game against the Nippon Ham Fighters and not realizing that if they lost, they wouldn't win the pennant. And being in a situation to drive in the winning run from second base with a single, the go-ahead run, he was trying to pick up both of the runners and swing for the fences when he saw, you know, a hanging slider instead of making contact. And they ended up losing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shocked to see all his teammates in despair because they're going to have to face an extra round of the playoffs and because they failed to win the championship, which is what they were trying to do. And nobody told him.
Right. And to our listener, Glenn, who always sends us a bunch of great questions, I tried to ask him about throwing off more off-speed pitches. Of course, he's a reliever, so he doesn't really rely on the off-speed stuff so much. So I'll try to ask a starter next time we're out there. But I thought it was really interesting that he was saying, hey, look, sometimes I can't get my curveball where I need to. So it's not like he's abandoning that pitch at all anyway. And he's a power pitcher in the first place, so you would think fastball slider he's got most of the time anyway.
Well, interestingly enough, since Jason Koskry, you know, it was funny because Jason and I attacked the same issue about the Swallows pitching and defense from diametrically opposed sides.
Mm-hmm.
Jason was going basically the batteries and I was going basically the fielding.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to, since I read that article, I do want to talk to Katsunori Nomura, you know, and I'm interested what the interaction, because one day I may have mentioned on the podcast, one day I was sitting there watching the Swallows game, and between innings the battery coach was talking with the catcher and the pitcher.
Mm-hmm. And I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, so when I heard your question, I remembered that, and it rang a bell. Okay, let's ask them about, you know, Katsunori. And I think a lot of Nakamura, he's an issue, which I'll get into in a second.
All right, let's talk about the Swallows a little bit then. Tetsuto Yamada back. Seemed like he was having a sluggish start to the season, but he has really come around. The team just finished sweeping the Dragons here on Sunday, and they're three games over 500, so we don't have to see every night or every other night or every team that goes in the first place and loses a couple games, and then we hear the Central League teams are all at 500 or below again.
Happened twice. They've all been below 500 twice now.
Yeah, so we don't have to hear that at the moment.
Not until Friday, at least.
Right. KG Obiki is hitting. They play some really good teams.
Can you play that one back again?
I know. Like, we haven't said that in years.
We have a broken audio. I think you said KG Obiki. He is hitting. I don't think, you know, it's one of those things like there's a monsoon. You know, we know it happens, but we don't expect it to be the normal. It's not something we expect to be a normal condition.
Well, we know it happens because we've seen it in video.
Sure. We have a historical hitting record of it.
Yeah.
And we know it does happen. We know he's not completely, it's just, it's not the common event. And he's had long stretches where he hasn't hit at all. So anyway, so that's going on.
Things are really clicking for the team right now. They're looking pretty good.
I think
of course that happens when you play the Dragons, I think, at home.
yes, but the Dragons aren't rolling over for the Swallows like they usually do, which is pretty much it's like they see the Swallows coming and they go like, we got these guys. And like, who are those guys? That's the norm. They don't normally play well against the Swallows. But
I know what you're saying, but I think it goes game to game and year to year. And I don't think any teams are rolling over. All these games are going to be tough, and that's part of what I've been saying since last year. But what do you think about the chances of Yamada getting a triple crown, because, you know, I was talking to somebody at work today, and they say, I can't believe Yamada is the home run leader right now. And I said, well, you, when you think about it, the past 2 years, about, somebody's has at least 30 home runs by now, and nobody does. And so part of it is that, yeah, he's the only one with 23, so he's leading. But the other part is some guys who have some power, like Coco Ballantyne, our leader last year, and Brad Eldred of the Carp, aren't hitting like they have been in the past.
And have been injured, and he was not playing today, which was a surprise.
Right. So yeah. Part of it is you could imagine the field coming back. Or a regression to some other mean that we don't know about.
No, you're just being mean. Or should I say average? Okay. Now,
nice.
A couple of things. I want to say, before I get into Tetsutoshi and Yamada, because I got a couple of things about that. I wanted to mention about the Swallows. A little very briefly. Don't worry, I see your eyebrows already rising.
I held them down, for goodness sakes. Come on.
I know you taped them, but it didn't hold them. they're escaping.
Well, when you say brief, it's like, okay, well, it's only going to be 5 minutes this time. I mean, you know.
No. Basically, the thing about the Swallows, you know, before the season, I think the common thread with the Swallows, they'll be okay because they're going to hit and score runs.
Yes.
Yes. Well, surprise, they haven't. You know, so many of the guys that they expected to score runs, other than you know, a few, have not. I mean, Yuhei Takai's not had a particularly good season. He had a good month. Yamada's okay, and Hatakayama was hurt a little bit. But Hatakayama's splits are weird. He goes bonkers against a couple of teams, and half of them are in interleague. And so on and so forth. But what the Swallows really are is something they haven't been for about 3 years, which is really good at catching the ball. I mean, you can laugh, and I know you don't. I don't hold the monopoly on snide, because I see some of that spread around on Twitter quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
About the Swallows outfield and their, you know, the outfield defense. But I will say this now: do they look great? No, but I'll tell you, they appear great. The indicators, the things I look at, like, are they turning balls into outs? Are they turning double plays? Are they throwing out base stealers? Are they getting extra out, opposing outs on the bases? And the answer, those are all positive. I think the Swallows are probably the second best defensive team in Japan right now. Or at least, I should say, that's what their record looks like. They're the second best behind the SoftBank Hawks. So they look very much like the Swallows from 1998 to 2000, where they had basically, they were all off, all defense and no offense. And here's the trivia part. 3 years in a row, they finished 66 and 69 in fourth place. I mean, I remember that. I wrote about it at the time. So that's probably not this kind of a cheap trick. So anyway, so that being said, the Swallows are unusual. But back to Tetsuto Yamada, who's playing the defense. I'm going to give you some numbers with Tetsuto Yamada.
Okay.
Now think of this guy, and think of this guy as a second baseman. You see, you know, somebody's got a .287 average, a .361 on base percentage, and a .478 slugging average for a second baseman, and you think, that's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
That's what Yamada hits on the road. I don't know when it happened during the offseason, because I missed the news, but it appears that Tetsuto Yamada bought Jingu Stadium because he owns it. His numbers.
Well, I can tell you this, it probably didn't cost him that much.
Well, yeah.
That old thing.
They're going to tear down in a couple of years. What's he going to do?
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll throw in the golf and the tennis.
The driving range. Okay. Driving range. So, anyway, plays at home. He's 382. 382 average, .483 on base percentage.
Yikes.
And a .757 slugging average. So, yeah. And that was before, this is through Saturday's game. So it included the extra carnage he added to the Dragons' miseries tonight.
Well, yeah. And the thing that I've noticed recently is his swing is a little bit different. He's you know, he's attacking like he did before, but he's really finishing things, hit his swing really well. I remember they put him in the cleanup spot for a short spell when Hatakeyama got hurt.
Sure.
And I think that's really, I mean, it's not like he hasn't been on fire since late June, but he really seemed to take off in July, and he's been really smacking the ball. He's really yeah. made contact.
Yeah, yeah. I got to watch tonight's game, and all I thought was selective. You could see him up at the plate and going, which pitch is the one I'm going to crush? It's like, and when he missed that fastball, well, it was a good fastball, but when he missed it and popped it up, he's going, oh, man, I had that one. Okay, So anyway, is he a Triple Crown candidate? This guy is a candidate to lead the league in hits, runs batted in, home runs, doubles, stolen bases, walks, batting average, on base percentage, and slugging percentage, total bases. Yeah. And this is like this, triples are probably the only thing he really doesn't have a clue. He doesn't have a chance.
Well, it's hard to get triples in at Jingu. So
it is.
Yeah, if he were playing at Nagoya Dome, he'd trade in some home runs for some triples, I think.
Yeah, that one today wouldn't have been a home run at Nagoya. It would have been off the wall.
Yeah. So, I think we can start the talk, and I think it's legitimate, and looking forward to seeing what he can do. I mean, obviously, the more that the Swallows stay in contention like this or stay near the top, I think the better chance he has, because they're going to have to pitch to him.
Sure.
And sure.
And this tight pennant race.
Right.
Where everybody's, you know, I mean, think about it. How far the Dragons, you know, the Dragons are basically a week out of first place. Or a week and a half out of first place.
Yeah, in theory. Yes.
Yeah, in theory.
Yes.
But yeah. But if they, you know, they win six or seven games in a row, then they're right in the heart of it. Now, I'm not talking about chances of that or anything, but I'm saying it's like nothing's a throwaway. You know, they're in this thing, and so every game is going to be hotly contested. Nobody's given up, and that's the coolest thing about this year. So. Anyways, that's that.
All right. Well, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the Bay Stars. Now, I heard from Michael Westbay, because he said, "Oh, you like the Bay Stars? Are you changing your pick?" And I said, "No. I'm not going to change my pick. Although I really like what they're doing." And then, of course, they had a bad week.
Yeah.
Including a game in which they gave up 17 runs to the Swallows with a 11th spot in the ninth inning. That's what we talked about in that interview with Logan just now. So, and the more I look at it, I know they're lacking in starting pitching. It's just that this team has something. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. I look around. They don't have really plus defenders at any position. Maybe Kajitani and Wright is. I mean, he's got the arm. He's got.
Sure.
He's got some range, but I still wouldn't call him a plus defender. And yet here they are in contention and. Their rotation, we were supposed to see, obviously Guillermo Moscoso is going to be back at some point, and I was told that he's going to be back in the rotation, and Mishima, who was pitching well, who pitched well last year and was starting out in the rotation, is supposed to be back at some point. Kubo, I remember I told you, I think I contacted you a couple weeks ago, and I said, how are the over 30 pitchers doing as opposed to the under 30 pitchers?
Right.
And you gave me a record that wasn't really all that significantly different, but I should have asked you about the guys who are 35 and up, and those are the guys who are winning a lot of games.
Well, for the Bay Stars. Well, they were.
Yeah, and, the Kubos and the Miura.
Yeah, for the Bay Stars, they just had, you know, they had some kind of mojo going there early on, and what it is or what happened, you know, what caused it, was it, you know, random, was it, you know, random in the sense that the rotation got into a groove all of a sudden, but for no real reason, or, you know, maybe they're all doing the same thing and that's bottomed out or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, the starting pitching, I had a story to do on Shun Yamaguchi because I hadn't talked to him before. Mm-hmm. And I thought his answers were quite interesting to me. And it was one of those stories where you're kind of waiting for a moment in time to hang it on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was 3-0 at the time. He fell to 3-7 today, or 3-5, or something. So, I'm not overly concerned about whether it's, you know, his record or 3-4, whatever it is. But basically, he has not, he's not had good results recently. No. He's got some things I like, and I like his attitude, but his results haven't been good. So
no, that,
that's you know, that story's kind of it's not, I don't have a back burner far enough away from the front one.
Yeah, take that off the fire. In fact, take it away from open flame. But you know, Yasutomo Kubo, Daisuke Miura, when those guys are leading your rotation, you know, you can't, I don't know how seriously we can take them, but I think the two guys, the two young kids that have been pitching recently, Yoshiki Tsunada has been good. Kenta,
like him.
Ishida came on recently, and he has pitched all right. And they've been good enough. Neither is pitching deep into games and giving the pen any relief, so what we're seeing is the bullpen's working every day. And that's the thing, is there's no ace out there who's going to pitch a complete game. So these guys are going to have to work every day. And I think that's going to wear them down. But I'm going to stick with them because I like what they can do on offense when they're not facing Randy Messenger or some really good pitchers. Or it just seems like every time, we talked about it before, when they play on the road, that offense is different than what it is at home.
Yeah.
And it's different against quality pitching. But you know, I look at them and I still think they've got enough talent on the offensive side, and they're playing good enough defense. You know, like I said, no plus defenders anywhere, but they seem to be. Well, I shouldn't say that because the kid. Well, no, even Kuwahara, the kid they hit in center the other day, who's had some big hits for them the past whenever he gets the chance to play. But again, he's just fast. I wouldn't say he's a good defender. Aranami has been good, but he doesn't have a great arm. I mean, there's just, I mean, you know, there's warts on every guy they put out there.
Yeah, and I think I think so many people were hot early on, and Jose Lopez is so happy to be there. You know, I think, I don't know what Aaron Balduris's injury situation is. He's
he keeps nicking himself up here and there, like every.
Yeah, I know he fouled a ball off his foot in Hiroshima about 6 weeks ago, and it took him about a month to get over that, which was about the last time I talked to him. And then he had hurt his wrist.
Yeah, he got hit by some pitches I saw, so the upper body. And then I saw him trip over first base this past week. So maybe a toe or foot issue there.
Yeah, so I don't know, but I like the you know, I like the team attitude, which is they're not really afraid of people. I mean, they're not always going to beat them, but they're not afraid of them, which is something we saw in the Bay Stars 10, 12 years ago, and that has gradually changed. And it wasn't all Kyoshi Nakahata's doing, but I think he's helped. I think an influx of young talent, you know, having Tsugo in the middle of your lineup is a huge difference. Speaking of guys who could win a triple crown if they
get it together, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see how that goes. Now, a seamless transition. We're going to talk about some notes. Now, Motonobu Tanishige, the catcher-skipper, I like to call him, the player manager.
I know you do.
The player manager.
I wish you didn't, but what can I do?
You can smile and send a little happy face when I do it.
Okay.
And a thumbs up.
What a great expression.
Because I know that means the exact opposite.
Hashtag high heat.
Tanishige played on Saturday, and he tied Katsuya Nomura for most games played all time in NPB at 3,017. And he entered Saturday's game in the seventh inning looking to steady his young club and the pitchers. And I don't really think he steadied that much, but, you know, at least he equaled the record. And this was at Jingu against the Swallows, and they got swept in the series anyway. So, and I imagine he's going to break this record in the first game on Tuesday against the Tigers. That's my prediction, I guess, if you want to call it that, because I think he'll want to just get it over with so that it's not hanging over the club for that series.
But on the other hand, he's got a sort of, you know, I remember before the season, well, he's only got to play in, what was it, 21 games or something, or 28 games.
I thought
games.
It was like 40 or something he was going to play.
Okay, whatever so. It was a small number of games. And yeah. Oh, yeah, it'll be a lock. But he's been, what I do like about him is, it's not about him.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the team, which is as it always should be. And he's out there, you know, I don't know if it'll be Tuesday, but it'll be when he thinks the best thing for the team is for him to be playing.
Okay, that's fair enough.
And he deserves, you know, it's one of those things you don't want to give somebody credit for doing the obvious thing, but not all people are that unselfish or that purely motivated.
Yeah, well,
at least that's how it seems to me. Maybe I'm being overly harsh.
No, but I think it'll end up being something that's positive for the team, because if he doesn't play, the media is just going to be asking him about it all the time and asking all the players. So I think he might as well just get it out of the way, or else it will become a distraction. But did you hear about what Nomura himself had to say about Tanishige? Did you hear the quote?
I missed the Nomura quote about Tanishige. Enlighten me.
Okay. He says, quote, "You're taking too much time off." He said, "I played right up until the end. If you're a player manager, you need to play more." Gotta love that guy.
You do. There's something to be said for Katsuya Nomura, and I can generally say all that stuff on family television.
Hashtag high heat.
But you know what he did? What he did is amazing.
Yeah, and truly amazing. Okay. Yeah. All right, and then the Eagles the other day, I wanted to mention that they set a franchise record with 19 runs scored in a game, which is kind of amazing for them, because they have this comes on the week on the heels of the week that we talked about how many holes they have and how they couldn't stop all the leaks that were going on, and then they were struggling offensively and couldn't score runs, and boom, they just beat the brains out of the Nippon Ham Fighters at Sapporo Dome, a place where you don't really figure to score 19 runs. I thought it was pretty interesting. The foreign guys, in fact, the guys I pointed to directly, Zelis Wheeler, Willie Mopeña, Gabby Sanchez, they combined for 6 hits and 6 walks.
I think it seems like nobody except the Hawks is safe from the roller coaster. There's a roller, they come to the park and, sorry, it's your turn today. Get on the ride. We're going to kick you for a spin. It's either going to be you're going to give up 10 runs or score 10 runs, because it's happening to everybody. It hit the Fighters. It hit the Eagles tonight. It's hit the Marines in the past. It's hit the Buffaloes more times than they'd like to think about. It hit the Lions this week. You know, it's just wild. It's only the madness seems to stop when the Hawks are playing.
Yeah. I remember it reminded me of their first 2 games.
Mm.
And I know you went to cover them at Chiba.
I covered the first one.
Okay, at 2.
The second day I went to see Oryx play Saber.
You were so lucky. You're so lucky. I know that Iwakuma was the pitcher that day in the first game in 2005, and he won, and we looked up the score, so I thought it was 2-1. It turned out the score was 3-1. But then the next day, the Eagles, and this was at Chiba, they gave up 26 runs and lost 26-0.
And the winning pitcher was?
That day? Mm. The second day in 2005?
Mm.
My first guess would be Shunsuke Watanabe, but I'm probably
correct. Wrong. The all-star reliever for the Lancaster Barnstormers.
I got it. I thought we weren't doing trivia anymore. You tricked me.
I apologize.
Yeah, you better. I was hoodwinked. All right, and one more note. Kazuo Matsui is 1 hit away from 2,000. I thought he was going to... He had 2 chances tonight to get it. I think the 7th inning and later, and he grounded out both times. So he'll have that record, so we'll talk about him next week in that respect. But also, Takeya Nakamura Okawari-kun hit his 300th homer on Friday night, and it was his 1,000th career hit as well, so... 300 of his 1,000 hits were home runs, I guess. And then, yeah, he belted a grand slam later on, the next at bat, I think, after that.
Yeah, which was his 15th, which ties Sadaharu O's record for most grand slams.
All time, and I tweeted that out right away because I heard that on the radio, yeah. So, yeah, interesting stuff. Good for those guys, and the record books will be rewritten this week, I think. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so this is a holdover from last week, and we did address it, and I did say we wanted to give it some time because it deserves a little bit of time, and I didn't want to rush through it real quickly. It's from at Graveyard Baseball, and they said simply, the question sounds so simple, and yet it's so difficult to answer. What are your letter grades and assessments for the 5 managers who are managing their first full seasons in Japan? So
yeah, tell me. I want to hear your methodology, because we're as usual radically different on this. And
I didn't know how to. I actually at first the first week when we got the question, I had it all figured out, and then I knew what I was going to do, and I knew what I was going to say, and then I actually looked up a couple places to see how other people evaluate managers. And it's really difficult. I told this to Jason, I think it was late last year, because we went out to dinner, Jason Koskri of the Japan Times, and I said, look, we're always privy to the results. We know what happened. But we don't know the plan.
Sure.
And that goes with pitches, that goes down to little details about shifts and stuff. And we can see, but we don't know what the entire plan is. You know, if they're playing, we can assume from where they position the defensive players, but we can't be sure. But we know what the result is. We always do. So we can't really base this totally on the results. And I saw one guy who likes to use preseason predictions or projections and assess how many wins each manager was above or below that figure. And I'm like, that sounds ludicrous to me, because in the preseason, we really don't know what's going on. We don't know what the teams have, what they're going to be. We don't know who's underperforming, who's overachieving. We got nothing. We got no information to base that on. I don't think that's fair. And you can see game management. You can see player achievement. I don't know that there is the perfect formula. So,
well, I think you're right on that. I think there's no perfect formula, and I want to make I'll just intercede briefly before we move on.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's not fair to base it on what we didn't know. But I would also add to that, it's hardly a fair exercise. It's sort of more an intellectual exercise than anything else, because, you know, you said we don't know the plan and we're not privy to that, but we're also not privy to the results. We can see, what can you see? You can see how many runs are scored. You can see how many hits are made and how many games are won and lost. And as you said, but then you said, you can see how the games are managed. And again, because you don't know what the plan is and you don't know what the options are, you really can only see, you're looking through an opaque window. All of this is
through. Well, wait a minute. Now you say we can't see the results. We can certainly see the results.
I'm saying we can see the results.
Okay, I thought you said can't.
But what we can't see about the results is what they mean.
Okay.
We can see who won the game, but did they win the game because they were lucky? Did they win the game because, the other team's reliever had the flu? Did they lose the game because...
I got you. Because it goes back to
random. It's like he had a batter has an excessive number of seeing eye ground balls is going to have a higher batting average than normal.
Right. It all goes back to it looks like a line drive in the scoreboard.
Exactly. So the point I'm even saying that when you look at the results, you know what the results are, but you don't always know what the value is or what he contributed to them. So it's really hard, and it's sort of like trying to stand in quicksand and swing a bat, I'm on firm ground. There's no firm ground to stand on. So anyway, having said that, please continue with your thoughts.
Oh, that was basically it. So I'm basically saying I'm not sure how solid the ground that we're going to stand on is, but we definitely, everybody's going to have their opinion. And I'm pretty comfortable with mine. And what I basically assessed, how I'm going to assess these guys is, I'm going to say, if I were to put you on a team with average talent, how much difference would you make? And so basically, I want to give everybody the same players, the same chess pieces, and see how they do. But of course, that's impossible. And even if you give them the same chess pieces, you'd have to give everybody the exact same chess pieces, and then you'd basically be playing tic-tac-toe.
Not necessarily.
Maybe not necessarily.
Because there are skill sets that, even though they're the same, they don't always match up. And I'm sounding like John Gibson to some degree, in the sense of, and I say that because whenever I like to compare two players, you say, well, you can't but on occasion. You say, well, you can't compare them because they're dissimilar pitchers. And I know where you're coming from, more so than I used to. But, you have to look at how things work, and you have to look at results at some point. But what I'm saying is that there are personalities that don't go together. There are some managers who are not good at, you know, if this is everybody had the same team, there are managers who are good at fixing problems and there are managers who aren't.
Okay.
Who are good with finished products. And there's, and I mean, and they may be exceptionally good with finished products. And there's guys who may be good with problem children. You know, so there's all kinds of things. Some guys are better with pitchers than others, and some guys are better with defense than others. And
okay. Well, let's get into it. What's your system going to be?
Okay, basically, I looked, you know, I liked your ideas. It hadn't occurred to me, and of course, we always want to, you know, imagine how people would do in different contexts, because that's a wonderful question. But what I did was somewhat similar. I'm very interested in basically one issue is to what degree players are playing up to their potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can look at what players have done in the past and see how much are they near the, you know, what their ceiling is, what we can expect from them. And so I looked at that. So how many hitters on their team are really, you know, we're just talking hitting, are really doing better. Okay, so that's sort of a body count. And the next thing I looked at was how much better the pitching and defense is compared to what it was a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is basically results. You know, is the team winning?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in the end, they're not going to fire, you know, they're not going to care if your pitching's, you know, if your pitching and your offense is better, but you're losing. So anyway, so those are basically my criteria. And then I made a letter grade out of that, which was completely and totally arbitrary. I'm not comfortable with the whole system, but I thought it was fun doing it.
Okay. All right. So first up, since this was the Lions guy and he's blogger and tweeter of all things Lions, we'll start with Nori Otanabe of Seibu, and I'm giving him a B-. And I love the leadership. I think he's got a plan. I think the coaching staff has a plan. I think they bring it out every day. And remember, you know, I told this to a Lions fan a long time ago. These managers, these players, they want to win every game, but they know that's impossible. And they have to manage for the season, not just to win games.
Right.
Or on a particular day. So, you know, I think he might be about average in decision making and all that other stuff. I think you're making if you make a 380 hitter sacrifice, you can be questioned all year long. And that's in the best case scenario. I think a lot of times people want to take Akiyama's bat and conk you upside the head if you want to do that. But
conk. I've heard the word conk all week.
Good.
So I'm glad you said that.
I think the best Seibu could do with its talent this year is to finish second behind SoftBank. I think SoftBank has the best talent. So I think he's got the team right in position where it wants to be. I think he's getting the job done, and I'm going to give him a B-.
Okay, my grade for the Lions, I gave Tanabe an A-, and he's the only A I gave out.
Wow, you're an easy teacher.
Yeah, well, I hadn't thought actually about I wasn't going into things that I think I saw, but I do like you know, and we talked about that on the show. I do like him resting players, him being concerned that Nakamura is healthy all the way at the end of the season. This is sort of a new trend, this idea that players are valuable and their energy is consumable. And it is taking hold with, I would say, with the younger managers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain if Kimeyasu Kudo is a younger manager or not. But okay, I gave him an A-. Basically, I saw that he's got three players who are really playing up to par this year: Nakamura, Asamura, and Akiyama. Mm-hmm. Mori is not, because he's still building his portfolio. But the pitching and defense is vastly better, or at least it was until tonight.
Series, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the other thing is, you know, when I made these out like a week ago, they might be a little different now. I gave him an A- overall.
Okay. Right. The next manager is Hiromoto Dave Okubo of the Rakuten Eagles. Mm-hmm. And I gave him a C+. And uh-huh. I think I actually wanted to give him a B, but I'll explain. He might very well be doing the most with the least in terms of talent, because he's missing guys like Ginji Akaminai is gone. He's been out with an injury. And then guys like Yudai Mori, a pitcher, Wataru Karashima, who's been a mope on the mound. Takashiro Shiomi has been inconsistent. Manabu Mima has regressed, and others are struggling. His foreign players, they haven't been tearing it up the way we expected. And I talked to Zealous Wheeler, but I did chat a little bit with Willie Mopeña that day, and talked to Gabby Sanchez that day, and it just seemed like there wasn't a connection going on there with the players and the manager, and there just seemed to be this disconnect out there, and I saw some divisions, and I didn't really want to open up that can of worms, but I didn't really like the tenor that I sensed when I was out there. And of course you get that when you go to the park and you cover the team and you know the manager. Obviously I've talked to Dave Ogbo in the past, so I just didn't like what I was seeing. But in terms of what he's doing, he's been very aggressive with the running, and that's fine and good, but he's running guys who probably shouldn't be running, and trying to get extra bases here and there, and you know, putting Mitsutaka Goto at shortstop instead of at second base. I'm not sure that I'm really fully behind everything that he's doing, and the results are okay in terms of where they are. So they're in fifth place, but you know, I had picked them to finish fifth or sixth anyway, and I just think with all the guys being out and underperforming, I think he's doing a pretty good job in terms of that, but I'm just going to give him a C+ and
that's interesting, and I think, you know, you don't want to, this is I think with the manager, and it's always the problem with the managers, you don't want to sort of put extra weight on his, you know, you don't want to give him too many debits for teams that underperform, but in the end, he's the one who has to have the team performing.
Yeah, somebody's got to be blamed.
Well, and I don't mean blamed, but I mean,
take responsibility.
If your team continually underperforms, there's probably a reason, you know, there's probably a reason for it. And do I want to say it's his fault? No, it wasn't a great situation last year. It's not a great situation this year. Now the question is keeping the players healthy. Is it all the as you know, I have a very strong opinion about what happened to SoftBank last year, and you know, this whole bit that the coaches sort of were told not, you know, the coaches were at times said, you know, I want this guy playing and I don't care what you say.
Mm-hmm.
So that can happen. And managers are a bit, in some respects, a bit like pitchers. And what I mean is that a pitcher goes out to the mound and, you know, a pitcher may not win a game for you. As we know, that's very hard. But a pitcher sure as heck can lose the game faster than anybody on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And a manager doing the wrong stuff and, you know, and doing weird stuff, and having disastrous policies can really cripple a team. And I don't know, I'm not making any assertions about Ogbo or anything. I have said I hope his issues in the past he's over with. But all I can say is the results are not there. Now, the one area where the Eagles have improved overall is, as much as I did have a go at them last time, was the pitching and defense. It is more stable than it has been.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's getting guys into the game. You know, guys are getting into the game with a chance to succeed. They're not always succeeding, but they're getting regular success. They're getting surprising success. The offense on the other side is a complete and total quagmire. It's like, it's almost as like he's torturing the player. You know, he's got the Uday Hussein motivational techniques. Oh, you didn't hit well in batting practice. We're going to take your finger off. So it's like none of the batters are performing up to anything. I mean, and I don't mean, you know, who on the Eagles is performing up to snuff? And the answer is nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Okay.
The offense is collapsing, and he has to bear some of the blame for that.
Okay. Kimiyasu Kudo of SoftBank. I'm giving him C++. Now, he has been given the keys to a car that drives itself. The only thing he has to do is put gas in it and maybe take it to the garage to do some maintenance. But I don't see him doing a great job or a great deal to help the car along the road. I mean, he's doing some great cheerleading. Go car, go. But is he doing a great job of managing? I think if you put him, I mean, there's an overflow of talent there. We talked about it at the beginning of the season in our previews. They have enough pitchers to go around to give each team in Japan one of their pitchers, and you said still beat them. So, and I still agree with that. They have a lot of offensive talent. They play great defense. There's nothing that he has to do except get in the car every day and drive to work. So I think if he's on a team that has less talent and he has to work harder at every aspect of the game, not to say that he's not working hard, but if he has injuries here and there, he's got people who are underachieving, he's got issues to deal with, he's got relationships to handle and all these things to do. If he is put in that environment, I don't think he's going to do better than anybody else in particular. I think he's pretty much neutral, so I'm giving him a C++.
So he's you're in essence going back to my University of California, Santa Cruz, which was pass fail. So you're giving him a pass basically because there's no evidence that he's any good, but there's no evidence that he's bad either.
Okay.
I hear that, but I'll tell you what I see with the Hawks. And when I looked at the hitters, what I see is, okay, we've had one guy who had health issues last year, and he has not quite returned from them. That is Yuya Hasegawa.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other health and the catchers have had, well, you know, catchers get hurt.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to hold him accountable for the catcher injuries, but the team's been very healthy. He's basically been able to pick and choose from everybody he's got on that deep roster because everybody's healthy. Matsuda's been healthy, which is not normal for him. Uchikawa's been extremely healthy, which is not normal for him. Lee Deho's been very healthy, which is okay. But the point being, with the biggest injury they've had to a position player was Honda because he overreached his ankle running to first base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a conditioning issue. So basically, Kudo came in here, and unlike most managers, or like many managers, he came in with a mandate. He came with a manifesto, is that we're not going to get hurt. And so far, he's been as good as to his word. So I got to give him some credit for that. The other credit is they're playing well. But with the Hawks, again, as I talked about a little bit here and there, the proof is going to be how the bullpen holds up in the second half. It did not do well under Akiyama. He overworked his bullpen for a variety of things going on. They were under-conditioned. There were other issues. But that'll be the question. If he improves that, then yes, he's made a solid contribution to the team in addition to the offense going through the roof. So, he graded B+.
A B+. All right.
Yep.
Next is Koichi Ogata of the Hiroshima Carp. I'm giving him a D. I don't see the urgency. I don't see the consistency. I'm not seeing leadership. Now, I already said that we're not privy to the plans, but I don't really see one in particular. I don't see, okay, we're going to be a team that does this or that or the other. He's suffering with underperforming players who aren't improving. I can't point to anyone but him because he's the guy in charge. When we look around to see that, you know, okay, this is not working, let's put in another guy or let's get a guy. I mean, the only thing that I can see is he's helped revive Takahiro Arai's bat, but he really hasn't inspired this ship. And it's a very talented team, and we talked about, Kudo taking over a car that could practically drive itself. And I think this car was built for speed and built to move, and it's, you know, he's got it aimed toward a ditch. I don't really see anything that's good. The bullpen has been a mess. I mean, the pitching, the rotation has almost been a mess. The only thing that we talked about earlier on is him putting Daichi Osada in the bullpen, and I'm not sure that that's a good idea for him long term. It might be something that's good for him short term and good for the team, but again, I think you got to look at the big picture, and why are they stuck in the mud? I think it's because of him.
I don't buy that, but I can't. On the other hand, I think your arguments are valid. I gave him a B, and basically on a couple of things. One is that I think they're a much better team.
A B, than them. Not a D. Yeah.
No. I gave him a B-. The offense the offense has been okay. I think he's, compared to other people, he's gotten some work out of the offense. He had an issue with, I think there are issues with how much they've produced. They could produce more, but you have to understand they're also coming off a historic season for Hiroshima, producing in that ballpark last year. I think the results, I think, you know, he would be higher, except the results are so bad. I like the team. I don't like the results, and, you know, and he's to take some credit for that.
Okay. Mitsuru Manaka of the Yakult mm-hmm. Swallows. I gave him a B+. And I think they had some overachievement early on with the pitching staff, obviously, with the way they kept people under three runs or three runs or fewer for a long time. They had some underperforming players. Yuhei Takai was one of them. I think Yoshihisa Naruse is still one of them. and he's got to take responsibility and credit for some of that. But I think he's gotten the bullpen in order. I like the way they play defense. They've been able to use guys like Nagisa Arakaki and Wataru Hiyane and win games with those guys. So, you know, I'm not sure how he's impacting the outcomes that much negatively or positively with his actual in-game movement. In fact, tonight he did something that I only did in Strat-O-Matic baseball, which was to walk the bases loaded intentionally, put the winning run and an extra run, a bonus run on, essentially. He had first base open, so two runners on with one out. He loaded the bases so that he could really set up a double play. And they didn't get the double play, but they got the next two batters out. I don't usually see that, and that's not really highly recommended way to go about it in baseball, because in real life, you know, guys can hit a home run off you or something like that. But he got away with it, so I'm not sure. I mean, he's risky, maybe against the grain sometimes with the, or against the book, you know, it goes with his gut, whatever you want to call it. But I like what he's doing, and I like the atmosphere around the Swallows. And again, we, you know, guys who are not, he doesn't put guys in difficult situations a lot of times, and that's the biggest thing for me. So I gave him a B+.
I agree with everything you said. I gave him a B, but not out of any sort of I think probably because I thought they were underperforming a little bit, but as far as, you know, who they've got going, I think the team overall offensively is really not all that good. You know, he gets high marks for the pitching and defense, and kind of poor marks for the offense. But overall, okay, you know, but I like him a lot. I like everything you said, I believe, is true. His, you know, I don't think game managing is nearly as important as we talk about. We talk about it 100 times more important than it is, because it's the thing we see 100 times the most of.
Right. We don't get to see the preparation.
We don't get to see the preparation. We don't get to see, you know, what is this guy doing, you know, the leadership area. What is this guy doing to make this guy a better player, you know, in terms of giving him playing time, sending him down, assigning roles, whatever. You know, whatever he's doing, whatever he has to do to be the team, you know, to build up the team's talent base, which is vastly more important than whether he decides to, you know, walk, you know, intentionally walk a guy here once, you know, once a year.
Okay.
So I would give him a higher grade, but I'm not sort of sold. But on the other hand, he and Tanabe, I like. He sort of seems to me actually kind of a smarter version of Tanabe, but a little more low key.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I like him. I like
him.
All
right. All right. Well, excellent question. We took enough time, I hope, to go through everything, and I hope you enjoyed the answers. And let us know what you guys think. Send your questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat@JBWPodcast, or go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there, and let us know what grades you would give the managers, the new guys, or even some of the old guys. Some of those guys need some grades too. We need to package them up and send them to those guys. All right, a long show. We appreciate you listening to the end, and we will see you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Okay, you guys all get an A from me.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.